Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talked to Sheila Block, the senior economist of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Yes, we went outside of Guelph for this week's episode, but it's in order to talk in a new way about an issue affecting workers province-wide right now, the minimum wage. The story is that small businesses are hurting while corporations are acting greedily by cutting breaks. But aren't we missing the bigger story? That is to say, how are these changes affecting the people actually earning minimum wage? Taking a closer look at the modern economy is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, I've been frustrated by the news. Who hasn't, right? But specifically, it's been frustrating to watch the news coverage of the minimum wage increase that went into effect on January the 1st, because it's been all from the point of view of business and not always has been mindful of the facts. Along with the cuts and breaks, it's been reported that Tim Hortons might be looking to raise prices. But doesn't Tim Hortons raise prices every year? A CTV Kitchener story profiled Smoke and Tony's barbecue, which closed last week, according to the owner, because of the minimum wage increase. CTV failed to do its due diligence, though, and failed to explain why two other Smoke and Tony's businesses closed in Guelph before the increase in the minimum wage was even an idea before the Queen's Park legislature. In all the stories written and told about the minimum wage, almost none of them have explained the benefits of increasing the minimum wage for workers, or how minimum wage workers struggle in other ways, or how the employment landscape has grown and changed over the last several years, requiring us to look at who's earning minimum wage and why. The stories have also failed to mention how wages themselves have generally been stagnant for the last few decades, which is the bigger story, but is not the one that the lazy finger-pointing corporate media seems to be willing to chase. But then I realized that I am media too. I decided to look for someone with the expertise that could help me consider the bigger picture and chase the story on a minimum wage that isn't being told, and that's how I came across the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Sheila Block is the senior economist there. She's a longtime CCPA research associate and participant in the Ontario Alternative Budget Roundtable. She has more than 15 years of research experience for organizations including the Ontario Federation of Labour, the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, and the United Steelworkers. She has also worked as both a political advisor and public servant in the Ontario government. So having said that, on this week's Guelph Politicast, we lean on Block's expertise and experience to address some of the persistent myths and talking points about the minimum wage increase. Does it cause prices to go up? Does it mean lost jobs? Does it mean businesses close? And so on. We also talk about the broader economic trends, like the growth of the service sector, the migration of unskilled labor away from manufacturing, and how the media might be missing the broader effects of increasing the minimum wage or not increasing the minimum wage. We also talk about the media coverage itself and where the debate goes from here. So I caught up with Sheila Block last week by phone. Sheila Block, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be on the podcast and talk with you about this.
And I appreciate your time. To begin with, you work for the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives as the senior economist. So to frame our discussion, why don't we just start with a quick intro about what the CCPA is and what your role is as the senior economist?
So the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives is an independent, nonpartisan think tank with a focus on issues around labor markets, around public finance and public policy. It's been in existence for more than, I think, 20 years, and it has both a national office that focuses on national issues and a variety of provincial offices across the country that focus more on provincial issues such as minimum wage. So it's nonpartisan, it's independent, and it's been around for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to begin talking about the minimum wage discussion like this, and maybe you can confirm what the reading I did, but it seems like when we're talking about minimum wage workers, we're talking about people in the service industry, so restaurants, hotels, retail stores, and I realize that last one is undergoing some level of contraction because of online shopping and, you know, big box stores gone out of business like Sears recently. But in a real way, we're talking about one of the most rapidly growing sectors of employment. Is that right?
So you're correct that the majority of people who are working for minimum wage in Ontario are working in three sectors.
Mm-hmm.
One is retail. The other is food services. And then the third sector is a kind of broad baskets that called business services. And what that includes is that includes contract cleaners. That includes people who are working in call centers, and that includes security guards. So that is a very large share. And you're also correct that the service sector employment has been growing much more rapidly than employment in the goods producing sector. So absolutely, that's part of the reason why there is a growing share of the Ontario workforce that's working for minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do enjoy hearing I'm correct. could it also be said that, you know, as we've seen a contraction in where unskilled labor could go into manufacturing and could, you know, work the factory floor without, you know, a post-secondary degree, without, you know, any kind of technical skill, without a college diploma, could it be said that, you know, the service sector is kind of where the unskilled labor has been forced to migrate because of that?
So there has been, you know, shrinking in the manufacturing sector, absolutely, in Ontario. And that has accounted for, you know, decrease in wage rates and some of those kinds of shifts and increased inequality. I think it's important to note, though, that manufacturing jobs didn't start out as good jobs. And
right.
really... Yeah, those were really bad jobs. And then when workers in manufacturing industry decided to unionize, that was how those jobs moved into good jobs or better jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, there are a lot more jobs in the service sector than there are in manufacturing available at the moment. We also have to look at a kind of gender shift. So when we look way back... women were less likely to participate in the labor force. And so in particular, you have an overrepresentation of women in the service sector and in those low wage jobs.
Right. And I think that plays into it, too, because I think the perception still exists that when you go into a store, if you're making minimum wage, these people tend to be women who are, for all intents and purposes, perhaps stay-at-home mothers, but are, you know, at work while the kids are at school to make a bit of extra money for the family, or you're talking about students who are working between classes or after school trying to make money. It doesn't seem to account, or at least the popular view of these jobs don't seem to account for the fact that there are a lot of people for whom this is their quote-unquote 9-to-5, this is their full-time job.
Well, I think we have to unpeel a few things in that statement.
Sure.
The first part of that is that if you are working in retail or anywhere else and you have children, you're not a stay-at-home mother. The second thing is that women with young children are overwhelmingly working in the labor force.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a kind of a throwback to think that women who are working in the labor force aren't, you know, are working for, I think the term used to be pin money.
Right.
What our research has shown is that it absolutely takes two salaries to maintain a family with children. So that's kind of one piece of it. I think the more prevalent mythology is that, you know, it's teenagers who are working for the newest smartphone that are working for minimum wage.
Right.
And that also isn't the case. In some research that my colleague David McDonald did, he found that you are as likely to be over 55 and a retiree and working for minimum wage as you are to be a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And what we know from the data is 80% of minimum wage workers are over the age of 20. So this really isn't a phenomenon for young teenagers.
Mm-hmm. And we almost see that on the flip side too. There are a lot of people who are at retirement age who are, you know, still have the energy, still have the drive that they want to keep working, but perhaps for various reasons, you know, They've aged out of their full-time job, but you know, in order to keep up, they have to go to the retail sector or take a job in the service sector.
Yeah, so I think the kind of inadequacy of the pension system means that a lot of people who a generation ago would have been able to retire aren't able to retire now. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that people might no longer, some of those manufacturing jobs that we talked about a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. if people have lost their manufacturing jobs, then they might be forced into minimum wage jobs just, you know, to put food on the table. And that absolutely happens to older workers as well as younger ones.
Okay. Talking specifically about the minimum wage increase, I want to talk about this first because this is kind of where my interest comes into it. But the media version, at least in the corporate media, is that this is going to have a negative effect on in terms of job losses, in terms of price increases, in terms of especially on small businesses. I want to start by asking, though, there are other places that have raised their minimum wage to $14, $15 an hour. According to your research, is there any proof thus far that jobs have been lost because minimum wage went up in these places?
So what we have is we have 20 years of economic research that really shows us that an increase in the minimum wage does not result in job losses.
Mm-hmm.
And what that research tells, and that's newer research, because the economic orthodoxy used to be that if you raise the price of labor in this way, you would reduce employment. So more recent research with more sophisticated methods of analysis actually shows that an increase in the minimum wage doesn't have a positive or a negative impact really on employment.
Okay.
We also have recent experience. And so, for example, in 2010, 2011, BC increased the minimum wage by a little bit more proportionally than the increase in Ontario that's occurring currently. And rather than having employment fall, we actually saw a growth of employment there. And there have been a number of jurisdictions in the U.S. as well that have increased the minimum wage and seen an increase in employment. Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to kind of parse out what the economic literature or what the studies that have been cited so much in the media are actually saying. Absolutely none of those studies are saying that the increase in minimum wage will result in employers handing out pink slips.
Right.
Instead, they're talking about something that economists called disemployment. And what they're actually saying is there would be a slowdown in employment growth with the minimum wage increase, and that it would be a slower growth in employment. And I think one of the things that we really have to step back and think about the trade-offs between the quantity and the quality of employment.
Mm-hmm.
Studies like the Bank of Canada study that have been widely cited, or a study by the TD Bank, even though they said there will be slower employment growth, both those studies acknowledged that labor income will be increased. And so what that's telling us is that the increase in minimum wage will increase the income of low-wage workers, and it might or might not result in something of a reduction in hours. So mm-hmm. it's a complex process, but then so is the operations of the labor market.
Right. And I think the Bank of Canada one that was kind of widely, I would say cited, but I think it was more miscited, was that it would cost 60,000 jobs. As others and you yourself just described, it's more of a slowdown. And it was a nationwide number, not an Ontario number. And it doesn't, I'm not sure how much it took into effect, like the fact that, more people are shopping online, and that number seems to only going to go up. I mean, my own mother was shopping online this past Christmas for the first time, and, she turned 70 this year. So That, I think, would probably have more an effect than the minimum wage, and probably an unknowable effect when we're talking, you know, two years out like that study was.
So what these studies do is they try and take into account only that one change.
Right.
So what they're saying is, other things being equal, what will this will the impact be? And you're absolutely right that 60,000 number from the Bank of Canada was national. And we have to put everything in context. That is 0.03% of total employment nationally.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very small impact. So we have to be careful. If you know, 60,000 sounds big, but it really, you really have to take that number into context.
The other thing I think we've seen, and it's been about 2 weeks since minimum wage goes up, or since minimum wage went up here in Ontario, is things like price increases. I think there was a story about Tim Hortons increasing prices. Of course, they increase prices every year. But thinking more locally about me, there was a restaurant up the road from my house that closed, and the local TV station kind of made a big story out about it. The owner blaming, by and large, the minimum wage increase for him closing. And I'm wondering, can a business decide how negative an effect like that can be within 2 weeks of it happening? And, you know, how much of that is maybe just poor planning on the business's part?
So I think there are a couple of things. I absolutely think that that businesses can do some of that planning. And there are going to be some businesses who really rely on exploitation of workers and who don't have another business model.
Mm.
And those employers will go out of business. But I think we really have to think about the minimum wage increase as a decision about how we're going to live together.
Mm.
And we made similar decisions over 100 years ago when we decided that seven-year-olds should no longer work in factories. And I think, businesses adjusted then and they'll adjust now. And for some marginal businesses who can't make it, they will close and others will open. But really, when we think about the vast majority of businesses, they will find ways to adjust.
Right.
And they will use labor more efficiently. They can reduce their profits. They can shift around hours, or they can increase prices. And going back to the Bank of Canada study, it did predict an increase in prices, but again, that was a 0.1% increase in the CPI that was predicted.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a very low inflation environment, and to decrease inequality and to acknowledge a fundamental idea that somebody who is working full-time, full year should not be living in poverty, that seems like a pretty good trade-off to me.
Mm-hmm. What about the argument that if the Ontario government had done this more incrementally, because it was, a $2.20 jump overnight, quote-unquote overnight, if it had been like 2018 goes to 1280 and then 2019 goes to 1380 and so on. Does that cushion the blow?
Well, it cushions the blow. First of all, you have to decide whether it's a blow or not. And I think I would describe this as an increase in costs. And I think I would reverse that question and ask whether low-wage families should continue to have to wait to move towards something approaching a living wage.
Right.
And I think they had 7 months notice for one increase and about 18 months notice for the second increase. And that's enough of a planning period. And you have to realize that businesses have increases in costs all the time. You can have the recent frost in Florida might really have had an effect on the orange crop.
Right.
That means for restaurants, the prices of their orange juices is going to increase. So this is something that that businesses have to deal with all the time, and they find ways of coping with it. And I'm sure that they are and will continue to find ways to cope with this.
You make a good point about making sort of families wait to raise themselves a bit higher out of poverty. And I think that's something that's been missing from the discussion is the positive impacts on the people who do make a minimum wage. So is there any research in terms of how that affects the people who are seeing this bump in their paycheck and maybe what the economic benefit of that is?
So one of the reasons why there isn't a big negative impact as a result of an increase in the minimum wage is that low-income people are more likely to spend increase than higher-income people. So if you have a high-income person, they get an increase in their wages. One of the things they might do is they might save a little bit more. The other thing is they might spend their money outside their local economy. They might go on a trip. They might do something like that. So there is a boost to local economic activity that results from an increase in the minimum wage. And we know that the minimum wage is also an important way to decrease inequality in a couple of ways. One of which is it increases the labor market incomes of low-income workers. And the other thing is it is likely to reduce some profits. So you're having a shift of income from profits to labor, which will also reduce inequality.
Right.
So there's a number of kind of positive impacts that result. And again, people when low wage workers have higher incomes or a higher hourly income, that might mean that they can stop working at their second job and spend more time with their kids. They might have more time to participate in their community. There's a whole range of positive impacts that result from that.
Am I wrong in thinking that those impacts are harder to measure, which is maybe why we go to the story about raising prices and, you know, the number of jobs being created?
I don't think they're necessarily that much harder to measure. I think they're less top of mind. I also think the business community is in a certain ways used to very much so being coddled by governments over the last number, 20 or 30 years. And so when a policy like this comes into place that really makes demands of business and says you have to step up and you have to make a contribution to decreasing income inequality, they're in a little bit of a shock. And so that's, I think, part of the reason why we've heard so much media and so much about their concern and their shock and all the negative impacts that they are worried will result.
Mm-hmm. The media side of this does irk me the most, because I would think that the better story is and maybe it has to do with the fact we don't report much on poverty issues to begin with. But to me, the better part of the story is the fact that a lot of people in this province are going to be able to have a bit more money in their pocket and be able to have a bit more leeway, like you're saying. You know, a lot of people who are working those minimum wage jobs, those are not their only jobs, and it is not because they like working 60 hours a week. It's because you can't live on $11.80 an hour.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this about the other argument is that minimum wage workers don't deserve the increase in terms of because their skills are not specialized. And I saw this online in a couple of places. I saw some people complain that, you know, they haven't gotten a raise. They make $15 an hour. They work, you know, in a specialized field. But why should a minimum wage earner be on par with them? And I'm wondering, that's not exactly true, because I think that a lot of these workers do have specialized skills, perhaps not ones that you necessarily need a college diploma to acquire. But I do wonder your thoughts on that.
So I think there are two things, one of which is, an increase in the minimum wage in this way will have a kind of knock-on effect and will increase wages over time for other workers who are working kind of just a little bit above the minimum wage. The other thing that this increase in minimum wage will do will be to kind of increase wage compression, to have less of a stretch between higher waged workers and lower waged workers. Mm. So I think it's really that kind of unhappiness that you're hearing about online really has to do with the fact that it's been a pretty tough road for low wage workers across the spectrum, and really we need to, the increase in the minimum wage is just one strategy to try and improve the work lives of low wage workers, and there's more to do.
Well, let's get into that. What more is there to do?
Well, we have to see that Bill 148 is not only about increasing the minimum wage. It's about providing personal emergency leave, increased and paid holidays, and it also makes it a little bit easier to join a union if people choose to do so. So that's those are the other aspects that can improve working lives. And then the next thing is that we really need more government policies to be modernized to understand how the labor market has changed. And so what that means is we have to move things like medical and dental benefits more away from an individual employer relationship and more economy wide. We saw a first step with that with the OHIP Plus, which is expanding drug benefits to young people. We need more of an expansion in public pensions. We again saw the enhancement of the CPP as a first step in that, but more needs to be done on that as well. So there's a whole range of ways in which we have to provide those kinds of services that people need collectively rather than individually, and just acknowledge the big changes that we've seen in the labor market.
Right. One of the things I did want to ask you about, and I realize you're an economist, so the politics are secondary, but there is a provincial election coming up, and I think that part of this move was political on the part of the government, the Liberals in power, to sow some goodwill. In terms of whether or not this is the minimum wage increase is a success here, and we see the benefits, What do you think the political consequences are, or maybe what the political benefits are? Will we start to see people push for more of those changes now that the government's taken the first step?
So you're right. I'm an economist, and I'm not I'm not the best person to kind of guess about what the political impacts would be.
Mm-hmm. Where does the debate go from here, do you think? Because As we've been talking about, we've seen the media reaction being very focused on the business side of things. I can't really recall a story on this that has been from the worker's side. So in terms of where we go from here, is this just going to become a facet of doing business? Is there going to be some kind of blowback, do you think?
I absolutely think this is just going to become a facet of doing business. I think this will settle in. I think employers will adjust. But I do absolutely agree with you that I think it's going to be an issue for the next election.
Mm-hmm.
And the parties have kind of laid out their perspectives. And I think Ontarians will respond to this.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this as maybe a wrap-up question. We've talked about a lot about what the media is missing. If you were to try and, I'm not saying you should pitch me or anyone in the media in terms of what you think an aspect of the story is, but you know, if there's something you think that the media is missing in this scenario, if you were to, you know, sort of offer guidance in this, what should we be looking at in terms of the effects on workers, on businesses, on the economy in general?
I think what's really important is to look at the impact of this increase on inequality. And I think it's also important to look at who's going to benefit. And we know that racialized workers are overrepresented in minimum wage work. We know that women are overrepresented, and we know that recent immigrants are. So I think this is an effective policy at reducing inequality on a number of dimensions, income inequality, and counteracting the impact of discrimination in the labor market. So I think that's a great story, and I'm hoping to hear more about it as these increases work their way through the system.
So Sheila Block, thank you so much for talking to me today about this. I appreciate your time.
Great. It was a great conversation. Thank you.
And once again, that was Sheila Block, the senior economist with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. To find out more about the CCPA and their work, you can visit their website at policyalternatives.ca. And that's all for the Guelph Politicast this week. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPN Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.